This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Today on the radio show, let's see, John Martin was, he was gallivanting last week, but he's back. And he's got a column up on Tyreek Smith stuff and Penny Hardaway and all of that. We'll talk to him about that and more. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Sam Hardiman is going to join us. He writes about the city. We got all kinds of stuff going on in the city, including turnover at MATA and changes at MATA. Jeffrey, have you ever ridden a bus in Memphis?
Not in Memphis. I've obviously ridden buses.
You've ridden buses elsewhere. A municipal bus ever
yeah.
Anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
I used to take the bus to work in Washington, D.C.
I was about to say, one of the places was D.C.
Yeah, take the bus all the time. You've ridden a trolley in Memphis, haven't you?
I have ridden the trolley.
In Memphis.
It's been
that's operated, or was, back when we had trolleys, operational trolleys, by MATA. I'll be honest. I understand it's a little frivolous. It's not how people really get around. I like the trolleys.
I agree.
I wish there were enough money for the trolleys.
Always the biggest problem with the trolleys is, like, there's only a limited amount of days where you can really enjoy them.
Because you're too hot, too cold, whatever else. I mean, honestly, I mostly did the trolleys when I had little kids. And I'd get them down there, and let's go for a trolley ride. And we'd go ride the trolleys, and that was fun. But anyway, we'll talk to Sam about that. So that's the lineup. It's John Martin. Then it's Chris Harrington. Then it is Sam Hardiman. It is, of course, opening day for the Memphis Grizzlies as they take on the Utah Jazz tonight. Jeffrey, another Grizzly season begins. How do you feel about it?
Cautiously optimistic. I mean, you know, we get the injury report. You see five names on it. Even though none of the names were surprises,
it makes me nervous.
It
I'm
does
a little
elicit
nervous.
An emotion.
I mean, listen, my general feeling is, oh, this is great to have him back. And we've had him long enough, and we've talked about this before, we've had him long enough that, you know, lots of people can't remember a time when we didn't have the Grizzlies, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they are part of the firmament, and they're just things that are fun. I saw yesterday, there's a tweet thread about what's one of the stupid things about watching NBA League Pass that you like.
Yeah, Matt Moore put it out there.
Right, Matt Moore put it out there. And someone said, you know, finding out what they're eating at the replay center.
Yep.
And it's just a wonderful thing.
It's good to have your guys back.
Brevin Knight.
And I know the guys.
And I know the guys. And they showed up on time. And all this stuff, like all of it. Super Grizz, the Grizz grannies and grandpas, everything about it. is it's just fun. And NBA games, the NBA season, it's just very different than a college football or an NFL season because those are like colossal week meetings, you know, prepping for the next one. Every game is epic. Here, we saw this last night. Is Timberwolves season over, Jeffrey? Don't believe it is.
No, I believe they have 81 more opportunities.
So every time you turn around, there's another game. The NBA season is a companion in a way that the NFL season really isn't. The NFL season is sort of this epic struggle.
There's always much more. Football just lends itself to narrative much better.
And this is, it's not just always on. You know,
right.
You can't just flip it on as background noise and have it like, and so I know people complain about so many games and I get that. I think the season would be better off reduced to 70 games as well. But the fact that there are so many games is what makes it reliable friend from now until, you know, May or June or whenever. So
my friends, my college group chat and I were talking about this, like, sports rocks right now because you got everything going at once.
And if you like the big epic stuff,
sure.
We got that going on over there. We got
but
massive
there's
World
for everyone
Series
right
coming.
Now.
No, there's no question. But then in terms of the actual season itself, okay, I'm really grateful to have Ja back. We got a taste of Ja during the preseason, obviously, but now we're going to get, you know, heavy minutes of Ja. Ja doing his best to carry teams to carry the team to victory. And so every night, it's not just that every night you get the Grizzlies, you know, God willing, knock on whatever, you're going to have every night, you're going to see one of the most electrifying players in the league, plus one of the most fascinating rookies and a whole bunch of other players who are interesting. And hopefully it is a we back season and all of that. So there's the general joy I have at the NBA being back. There's the specific joy I have at Ja, this version of the Grizzlies, being back. And then there's the nervousness I have that was created by the spate of injuries, not major, but certainly accumulating injuries in the preseason with Jaren out, Vince out, Gigi out, Cam Spencer out, Luke Kennard out. Like, that's like, you know, Kennard just got thrown in as a bonus in the last week, and he's out for a week or so, apparently. So, like, that stinks.
He was the injury to be named later.
That stinks. Like, this is ridiculous. We were supposed to see our team, and now we're seeing only some, you know, diminished, winnowed version of the team. And so does that make me nervous about tonight and about the next 10 games? More nervous than I would have been? Yes. We yesterday went through, yesterday? I believe it was yesterday. We went through the first 10 games.
Yep.
And we said 7-3, but you know what? I might lock in 6-4.
I would have, like, locked in 6-4 if you would have said clean health. But
yeah, so I am a little nervous about all that.
I see you have your traditional opening night blues.
Well, pessimism. My general pessimism comes into play. The Utah Jazz, sort of an interesting team because they're really on two different time trajectories. It's very clear they're tanking. They've got a whole bunch of young players, whatever else. But then they also have, you know, Markkanen, Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson. Like, they got
credible NBA guys.
They got veteran. They got some veteran NBA guys. Walker Kessler, I guess, counts as that now, right? So
solid NBA big.
A very good coach. Some solid guys. And then they have, over the past 2 years, first round picks: Taylor Hendricks, Keontae George, Bryce Sensabaugh, Cody Williams, Isaiah Collier, and then Kyle Filipowski wasn't a first round pick, but he's the first pick of the second round. So you've got 6 high picks over the last 2 years who've got to get playing time, but you've got this core of veterans who can 100% beat you, like 100% beat you.
Absolutely.
And so I'm kind of nervous about it. I'm kind of nervous about it, and I would very much like them to get their first win of the season. Tonight, Houston will be a tougher test, you would think. And then you come home to play Orlando, who is a tough test.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the way the season works.
So let's get this going in a positive, fashion tonight. Grizzlies, and Utah. And of course it will be carried right here on 92.9 where Eric Hasseltine will be on the call. I'm excited. Last night, I got some other things to say about the Grizzlies opening day in an interview I did recently with Richard Smith, which I'll talk about in a minute. But last night, just a reminder that this stuff is just one game.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Last night we saw two tilts, one which wasn't much of one, because the Celts came out and hit 29 threes. And by all rights, it appeared that ties the record for most threes ever. They missed their last 13.
Like, yeah, they were going for it.
They were 100% going for it.
They felt the pressure of the record. So many are asking, when the heat was turned up, could they really get the job done?
Yeah, that's a fair question. Even with all those misses at the end, they shot 47.5% from three. I'm just going to say it's hard to beat that team. It also, by the way, underlines another reason that you could be a little nervous about the Grizzlies.
Three-point shooting?
Like, all this new offense stuff, like whatever else, pace, whatever, they don't have shooters.
No, I mean, this is always...
They have, as my son Peter pointed out, the way he phrased it was, of serious teams, teams with serious aspirations, they have fewer good shooters than any other.
Yeah, so to me, this has always been kind of... When everyone always complains about half-court offense, I'm just of the mind that half-court offense isn't solved by scheme. Now, what could be solved by scheme this year is you become a better three-point shooting team throughout the course of the year because you're going to have more open looks, and therefore you'll take more. But does that solve the playoff issue of, because as Chris always points out, like the game slows down throughout the season and throughout the playoffs, and so then it just becomes tough shot-making, and the Grizzlies don't have a ton of tough shot-making.
If Santi starts tonight,
yeah,
you got their starting five out there. The only dude who can put up a three-pointer, and Santi has been, like, he looks good. He should be a shooter, right? He has not actually been a great shooter. He should be a good shooter. Looks like he should be a great shooter.
He had a bad year last year, but he actually, I think the year before, he wasn't really that bad.
But the only dude...
That's a proven entity.
Ball swings they put up a three. The only one who are they on that starting lineup that have confidence going in is Dez.
Yeah, in the starting lineup, yeah. And then beyond that, it's Luke.
Certainly not Marcus.
Nope.
Zach Edey's not going to be shooting them, right?
Presumably.
Ja, don't have confidence in Ja making threes. And Santi, depending on how he's feeling, whatever. You know, like I'm not. And that's a problem compared to the Celtics last night. You know, they're just shooters everywhere.
No, I mean, last night to me felt like a lot of what we saw in the playoffs is like when you could tell in the first quarter if their shots are going in, you're like, okay, well, this is done.
And then from the Knicks' perspective, what was interesting about it, of course, is they did this against the Knicks team with all these wing defenders,
yep,
right, who are like, you got player after player who is designed to compete against the Celtics, and they got crushed, but they got a lot of working out to do. That's a new team. You know, it's a new,
for sure.
It's a new team. Things will change.
I think they could have played, really well last night and still lost.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
Here's the point is, they actually, but they gave
why,
up.
Why it waste wasn't, a good game?
It
why waste a good game when you're going to get beat anyway?
Like, they were giving up open threes, particularly early, and that's not what that team is designed to do. So they will figure some things out. As for the Lakers, they got the win over the Timberwolves. Anthony Davis was immense, 36 and 16. J.J. Redick, first win. Jeffrey, the era starts off brilliantly. And, of course, there was something else that happened in that game that people were talking about. But
totally organic, not orchestrated at all.
Yeah. I forgot. Oh, that's right. It's the Bronny thing.
Mm-hmm.
4 minutes left in the second quarter. LeBron and Bronny are introduced. And the score at that point is Lakers 51, T-Wolves 35. And comes in, gives up a bucket to Julius Randle, has a shot blocked, misses a shot, short run, checks out, and that is that. To be fair for a minute, the cool thing for a minute.
All right.
I'm just going to be fair for a minute. Then I'm going to resume being
we
unfair.
Have to?
No. The cool part of this is the Bronny, is LeBron part of this, right? Is that he has played long enough
to actually make this possible.
To make, and he isn't hanging on.
Like, no, he's still very good.
When Gordie Howe did it, like, the better player there was his son, Mark Howe, right? When Gordie played with his in the NHL with his sons, I think Mark and Marty, maybe Marty was the other one, but Mark Howe was a superb player. Gordie at that point was, you know, here, the fact that LeBron has had enough seasons where he could make this happen and still be awesome at basketball, that's the part that...
Yeah, that should probably be celebrated.
I stand up and applaud that. Like, that dude is this good at basketball for this long. Bronny was in the eighth grade when LeBron moved to L.A. to
right.
finish his career, you know, like, to finish
his
retirement,
career.
The retirement tour. And so it is an extraordinary accomplishment for LeBron James. And then for Bronny, you know, whatever. Everyone knows he did not deserve those minutes, right? It doesn't
right.
make me mad any more than it outrages me to look around and there's nepotism everywhere in the country. Fathers help their sons get jobs. Truth of the matter is, I try to help my sons when I can't get jobs. You know, that's what fathers help their sons get jobs. mothers help their sons get jobs. Like, it's, there is all kind of people, there are connections and nepotism. And this is going to be a shocker to you, ladies and gentlemen. The world does not exist purely by merit.
Right.
Right.
The problem is they're trying to sell it like that.
I am not hating on the fact, but then the celebration is, oh my God. But if you just focus on the oh my God, can you believe how great Bronny's made it? No, he made it because his dad's LeBron. And none of this is a surprise to anyone. And the remarkable part of this is the LeBron part. Really, it's extraordinary. And the Lakers, when they are fresh, and when they have AD being that AD, they'll be really good.
Yeah. I mean, if he plays like that, he's one of the best players in the world.
And in fact, you got a lot of games. It was what the number was, 70-something out of AD last year. If they are fresh, and if AD is that AD, LeBron was fine. He was 16-5 rebounds.
I mean, they can't shoot either.
No, not a great shooting team. But there you go.
Yeah, so, 76 games last
and
year.
Fine to see the T-Wolves take a loss. I'm still more worried about in terms of who sure. You feel like you're going to be competing against for the Grizzlies. I didn't mind the outcome of that at all. We have other news to talk about, including the DeAndre Hopkins going to the Chiefs, including Fernando Valenzuela passing away, et cetera. But I did want to talk briefly while I was on the topic of the Grizzlies opener, before we move away from the NBA, about the piece that I have up today at the Daily Memphian. There's really two pieces up at the Daily Memphian where I went and had a conversation with Richard Smith, who's Fred's son, is now an executive at FedEx. He's CEO of, it's kind of a complicated title, CEO of International and of Airline. And I sort of was like, what is that?
They've been consolidating because they had a lot of.
But what that means is airline is like FedEx does obviously have planes. It is an airline,
right?
You know what I mean? And so if you're talking and you're talking to the people at United and American and wherever else, there's this airline part. Now, American ends with the airline part. FedEx has all the other stuff,
right?
You know, like it's got all the delivery stuff and whatever else. So then he's also head of international for FedEx. So he's a big deal at FedEx, obviously. And he's been deeply involved, has written letters to the editor and whatnot in the discussions about downtown. In fact, if you look at the old Gibson Guitar Factory right across from FedEx Forum, he was instrumental in FedEx moving offices down there, renovating the place. And it's beautiful now. And so, as he said to me, he said, you know, had we not done this, there could be just an empty building right here across from FedEx Forum. Instead, he looks out his window at the front entryway to FedEx Forum and is deeply concerned about, of course, the future of the Grizzlies and downtown and all of that. And so that's really what inspired me to have the conversation with him. Now, in the course of having the conversation with him, I learned some interesting things. One is, the way he described the Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium thing with his dad, how it came to pass, and again, there's two pieces up at the Daily Memphian, you can go read them, but this one was, you remember, Jeffrey, how could you forget, the fracas over how to divide up $350 million of state money.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And you recall that the University of Memphis was pushing to get theirs.
Very publicly. Right?
And because they had to start construction immediately and all of this, which they didn't. Whatever. They were, I think they were smart strategically pushing.
They did what was in the best interest of the university.
Is what Richard said was, listen, we looked at this and we said, I'm concerned, and I'm paraphrasing, you can see the exact quotes in the Daily Memphian. I'm concerned that if like they just get theirs and the Grizzlies haven't signed off on it, the Grizzlies could take their ball and go home. They can say, the hell with this, I'll get out of here. Right? So he said, really, as this was going on, we set up the meeting with the president of the university to ask him to slow their roll. That was his exact phrase. I thought we were going over there to say, hey, could you please slow your roll? And he said, and Fred says, you know what? In the middle of it, he says, you know what? By my back of the envelope math, we're about $100 million short here. So I'll give $50 million and I'll help you raise the other $50 million. And Richard said, I had no idea he was going to do that. And he walked out of that. He said, Dad, that was really generous. And Fred said, well, we have to do something to help the city to get out of this pickle that they're in right now. And by the way, I'm about to turn 80. It's your money.
I like that move.
It's your and your siblings' mm-hmm. money. So that was interesting. I did ask him about conference realignment, and he said hopeful things, nothing particularly specific, but you can read those things also at the Daily Memphian. But then I talked to him about the sort of, you know, what's happening with the Grizzlies and the plans for downtown that Sam has written about extensively, Sam Harbin over at the Daily Memphian, about the Grizzlies had, because people may be wondering this, here we got a new season starting. Where are they on their lease? And by all accounts, the city and state have assembled the $550 million that will be needed to renovate FedEx Forum. And so you're like, well, okay, why haven't we signed a lease then? Like, what's happened? We got to the $550 million, which, by the way, compared to what's happened in Oklahoma City, where they're having to build a whole new arena,
yeah.
City's getting off, and I know this, people may not believe this, city's getting off cheap.
It's likely when it's all said and done, Oklahoma City's going to be a $1 billion price tag.
So you're like, what's happened? And what's happened is that, and again, Sam has reported this too, is there is going to be an ask from the city and the Grizzlies to the state for additional money, which has not been a sum that has been undisclosed and maybe is still yet undetermined, honestly, to the state for enhancing the whole area around FedEx Forum. Because if you're moving and if you're signing a lease for an apartment bill for an apartment, for example, you want to know the apartment you're operating in a decent neighborhood, right? And so there's going to be this ask, and what will be involved? It's a little unclear, but it's very clear that what is clear is that it will be a fair amount of money for security, right? So people feel safe as they go there, and there may be some envisioned changes to Beale Street and the entire district and entertainment district around FedEx Forum. One of the things in certain cities, what they have is they have dedicated entertainment districts, which are run by a separate organization where the security rules are a little different, where you have really high-tech security. Like evidently, Richard was telling me that in Detroit, you don't have to stop people. They don't have to walk through a metal detector, right? There's scanners set up that
right.
as soon as you enter this area, people know no one's got a gun,
you know?
So there's all kinds of conversations about that. And I'm sure that if they wanted to, Jason Wexler and the Grizzlies and the city could divulge that. They have not. But there will be an ask to the state. And that'll be, you know, playing out over the next, you know, we're talking January, February. And Richard Smith was just making the point of how critical this moment is for downtown. That in 2019, and you can argue about whether the momentum we thought we were seeing was real. There are various people who will tell you, yeah, what real big projects actually happened? What really came to fruition? But what Richard said was very clear is the people were real. The density was real. You'd walk around downtown and you'd feel people there and the vibe was real. And people, you'd see people walking their dogs and all of that. That part was real. And then the pandemic comes and the crime spike happens and all of that. And he's just pointing out how important it is to reverse that trend and to bring people back downtown. And the Grizzlies, for good or ill, it's kind of crazy to think that an NBA team would have to be an important part of that. Like, that's not their job. Their job is to win basketball games,
right?
But it's very clear that the Grizzlies are an engine or are one of the movers in this phenomenon and this hopeful project that will be unfolding. But as you look at the Grizzlies season, like this stuff that's going to be happening, this ask to the state, and then of course the state is mad because the gun referendum's on the ballot, whatever else, are they going to get the money that they ask for, all of that. All of this stuff, I mean, you may not want to hear this, but it's as important as what's happening on the court. Like, lease goes through 2029. It's getting to be time, ladies and gentlemen. It's getting to be time. And so this is an important moment for the city with this ask, with these developments, in terms of figuring out the future of the Grizzlies and FedEx Forum. It does help, by the way. It does help to have Ja.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
And to have a very good team, it kind of...
Yeah. Can you imagine if you were going through this at a time when you had one of these 21-win Grizzlies teams, you know, with nothing to root for and nothing to care about? It is an electrifying team. I continue to believe that there are few players in the league who are more fun to watch than Ja. You can make an argument, if you wish, that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a better or at least more reliable player to have as your best player. I won't hear any arguments that he's more fun.
No, totally agree.
You know? And so it is an electrifying, an absolutely electrifying product that they have there. And it is a big moment and a big season for this franchise for all kinds of reasons. All right, getting to the other news, Jeffrey. DeAndre Hopkins to the Chiefs. That happened this morning for a conditional fourth. What do you think?
I mean, it gives them some receiver help.
How much diminished do you think he is?
It's just so tough to say because their quarterback play has been so bad.
It's a little bit the same with Amari Cooper. Now, Amari Cooper's younger, but like you got the quarterback situation in Cleveland and you got the quarterback situation in Nashville, and who can tell anything about the receivers?
It makes the evaluation so hard.
Calvin Ridley's been terrible. Is he terrible?
Well, Ridley really wasn't that good in Jacksonville.
He wasn't that good in Jacksonville. Though.
The thing about Hopkins is I feel like we really are reliving the entire life cycle of the Patriots just all over again. It's like, okay, we're going to freak out that they're going to get somebody. Oh, here it comes. Like, we're just giving them another championship.
He is not that anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, he is not peak Randy Moss going to the Patriots, but he is credible. Here's the thing about Patrick Mahomes; it's kind of amazing. Patrick Mahomes, undisputably the greatest quarterback in the NFL right now, an all-time great, champion, terrifying. All of that is true. It is also true that he leads the NFL with 8 picks. That he has fewer yards passing than Daniel Jones, that his passer rating is 11.4 points lower than Justin Fields, and that he's taken more sacks than Bo Nix. All of those things also true, and a lot of those things. But that's my point. My point isn't that they're not great. My point is that he is not having a great season, and he is not having a great season. 8 picks, fewer passing yards than Daniel Jones, passing rating 11.4 points lower than Justin Fields, more sacks than Bo Nix, because of his weapons, not because he's not great. We know he's great. So it is because of his weapons.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just keep going back to not last year, but the year before, he had this kind of start when everybody started doing the multiple safeties, and he was throwing a bunch of picks early.
Then it was an adjustment to the way that was correct. Very clearly
and
an adjustment.
It's also important to note they lost games that year.
Right. Oh no! The frustrating thing about it is that they're losing nothing. Like
right.
they're literally undefeated. I do think, forget my Bills fandom. If you're the Ravens right now, you look over and see what the Chiefs, and they look vulnerable.
Yeah, I still think that they're going to have to. They're always just going to have the middle block until they beat them.
Of course. All of this is true. You got it until you beat the champ. Well, I'm not disputing any of that.
What I think is interesting about all this that we're talking about, though, is I'm curious if this could be a more wide open or untraditional MVP year, because if Mahomes is going to be the starting quarterback of the number one seed, that usually is...
getting the MVP if he plays like
correct.
This. Not even close.
But I've also wondered, like, are we really going to give Lamar a third MVP?
Yes, people are. Well, it depends. Right now, if the voting were today, Lamar would get a third MVP, even though it's the third MVP. But, will Josh pick up the pace now that he's got receivers? Will Jared Goff continue to do great things?
Will the Lions be the one seed?
Will the Lions be the one seed? But right now, I understand people wouldn't want to give Lamar the MVP, but they would. I think the other interesting phenomenon here is, and you've talked about it on your show, is the trade deadline stuff. It's becoming like, it's not baseball yet, but contenders go out and they pick up pieces at the trade deadline. It's just a thing. And we've seen it. You know, we've seen it with the two receivers who were picked up last week. The Jets, I guess they're contenders. They thought they were contenders. They imagined they were contenders. The Jets go out and get a receiver.
Jeff, they've been playing with too much anger.
The Bills go out and get a receiver. Now the Chiefs go out and get a receiver. And there are a lot more receivers to be had, including Cooper Kupp, evidently on the market. Deontay Johnson, like everybody in Carolina, is on the market.
At least should be.
Or should be on the market. So it will continue to be interesting to see what happens there. Commanders, by the way, released another first-round pick. Jamin Davis, do you remember him from Kentucky? Linebacker. He was a physical
freak. Like,
I don't know if he was on the
freaks list.
The freaks list that The Athletic does every year, but he should have been because he was a...
He was definitely captain of the looks like a linebacker to the ball snapped.
So this means Montez Sweat, Chase Young, Jahan Dotson, Jamin Davis, all recent first-round picks, all gone.
I mean, they are just trying to...
And yet they have figured it out.
Anything that could remind you of the Dan Snyder era, they're just trying to get rid of
it. It's just unbelievable. And then we had the news that Fernando Valenzuela died at the age of 63. You remember Fernando Valenzuela.
So Fernando Mania is...
What year were you born?
88. So that's like basically right around then.
His big year... He was still active. He was still pitching when you were born.
Correct.
But his big year was 1981 when he came in. He won his first 8 starts for the Dodgers. This Mexican with a delivery that no one had ever seen before, where his eyes roll back in his head. He's looking skyward, throwing a screwball, and wins his first 8 starts, 7 of them complete games, 5 of them by shutout. His ERA after those 8 starts was 0.5.
That seems pretty effective.
He goes on to win. He actually tailed off a little that year, but that year he did win the NL Rookie of the Year and the Cy Young. He had been discovered by, this is one of these classic Dodgers scout named Mike Brito had been watching a Mexican rookie league game in 1978. Scouting someone else. You know, that's the way it always happens. You're scouting someone else. And here's this pitcher. And so they sign him. And Carl Hubbell, who had the best screwball and one of the best screwballs in history, said that Fernando's was the best since me.
Like that.
He did throw a no-hitter against the Cards in 1990. And then one of the fascinating things about pitchers, even more than... This is not true of quarterbacks. Like, you have it 1 year, or you have it for 1 3-year stretch, and then you don't.
Yeah. Who else
is like that? Like, what other position? So Fernando ended up pitching for the Angels, the Orioles, the Phillies, the Padres, and the Cards, by the way, who ultimately released him. And then he went and pitched for more in Mexico. He was 173 and 153. But who else? I guess running backs kind of can do that. Three-year stretch and then can just kind of bounce around. Like Shady McCoy.
There's a physical element there.
But isn't it just what it is with pitchers too?
To me, oftentimes what this happens with, though, is guys that have, I don't want to say a gimmick, but they have, it's not just pure power or breaking stuff. It's like it's a screwball. It's something that, like, I gotta imagine that does unbelievable damage to the elbow. And it's like, once you get cut on, like, you're not really the same. And we've gotten better with surgeries.
Like, Matt Cain was great until he wasn't. And then he was totally mediocre. He was a horse. You know, and he wasn't there was nothing gimmicky about him.
And I don't know. It's like maybe the running back similarity is it just the accumulation of innings? But then you see guys like Verlander, and it looks like Verlander lost it, and then he comes back.
Well, that's the other thing. You do see guys who lose it. Louis Tiant was one who, he died recently too. He was one who was great, and then he was cut and bounced around, and then he came back, and then he found it again.
And then there's also some
golfers.
Guys,
did golfers? Is that what's happened to golfers? Like, that's in the head stuff, right? That's some of that's physical too, though.
Also, golf has been skewing younger. Like, it used to be, like, Phil Mickelson didn't win his first major till 34. I think it was 34, and then he wins six. But golf is now skewed so young with all these guys, and that's there's a lot of technological advances that kind of explain golf more so than other sports. But I think, like, the other thing about it is, like, some pitchers, like Bartolo Colon was originally a power guy. He reinvented himself and kept his career going by kind of, like, being crafty
and whatnot.
Well,
you see people in the NBA, people reinvent themselves, right?
Sure, it's like shooters.
And running backs don't, though. I mean, Derrick Henry is great, but he's not reinvented himself. He's still great.
No, he's the same type of runner.
Same type of runner. But quarterbacks, I guess, can reinvent themselves. Was Peyton, Denver Peyton, different than Indy Peyton?
Yeah.
Crafty?
Well, particularly the last season.
Right.
The last season. The first run, it was different, but it wasn't to the extreme. Like, what we saw at the end was, I mean, he got benched for Brock Osweiler.
It's true. That's amazing. That is hard. I'd forgotten that. NBA players very clearly do. Jordan's a perfect example of it. You know, when Jordan returned, he was a very different Jordan.
Correct.
But Jason Kidd reinvented himself along the way. He became a shooter. He was a total non-shooter when he came into the league. Anyway, Fernando Valenzuela, who was doing Spanish language broadcasting for the Dodgers, dies, sadly, just before the Dodgers embark on another World Series. We got John Martin coming up next. This NBA season, you can make every pass, play, and point mean more over at FanDuel. Check out newer bets like the number of dunks, assists, or three-pointers in 3 minutes. Doesn't matter if you tap into FanDuel before the game starts or after it has already tipped off. Plus, of course, go to FanDuel.com for a chance to score $300 in bonus bets. You can do that as well. NBA season is underway. Grizzly season is underway. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's C-A-L-K-I-N-S. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. John Martin, then Chris Harrington, then Sam Hardiman. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, that's right. Frame Corner is the place to go if you want something framed. You can walk in and buy a frame. Here's the truth. If I were to do that, I'd botch it. I've got no ability to take a frame and put, I couldn't make it look good. And that's just with a simple thing. I count on their expert custom framing to make things look good. And then if it's something complicated, some collection of photos or some sports memorabilia, literally during the break, I was sent a photo of a ticket to a Dodgers game and a signed picture of Fernando Valenzuela that someone has and beautifully framed. That's the kind of thing they do at the Frame Corner. Exactly that. Beautiful custom framing. Perfect for the holiday season, by the way. 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. John Martin joins me now. Jason John every single day from 11 till 2. So last night, as I was going to bed, I got a text from Parth, who alerted me to a cryptic tweet from Penny Hardaway. And it was not a tweet. It was over his IG account. And it was just a song with a little crying face emoji. And the lyrics to the song is God Favored Me, Part One. And the lyrics include, they whispered, conspired, they told their lies, but God favors me, my character, my integrity, my faith in God. He favors me. So what's interesting is Parth then retweeted this as a cryptic tweet, okay? And then the responses to Parth are all, you people are weird. You media is weird. Get off his nuts. Like whatever else. I just think it's so bizarre where now It's what Chris Harrington calls modern hieroglyphics. We try to figure out what things mean, mm-hmm. and we assume they must mean something.
Mm-hmm.
But they can mean nothing. He could just literally... Penny has always said that he believes that his path was chosen by God. This path, this task in front of him, mm-hmm. you know, obviously goes back to his longtime friendship and that tragic story and everything else. So let me ask you, when you see this tweet, do you think, oh, NCAA decision must be coming down, or like something, or oh, he's feeling besieged, or is he just tweeting a song, man? Sometimes a banana is just a banana.
I saw it on his. I follow Penny on Instagram, so I saw it even before part.
Do you get some kind of alert?
No, I don't get an alert. It's not like that. I followed him on Instagram for a long time, even before he was the Memphis coach.
I
saw it even before Parr tweeted, and I just like closed it and moved on to the next thing. Like I heard the audio, and right. I'm, you know, I get it. Like it's not about anything other than Penny feeling some type of personal way,
feeling like God favors him.
Whatever because he probably feels like he's let us know this. I mean, he said all those things actually publicly. Like we have attacked his character. We have come at him.
Leave me out of it.
You know. Well, I said, I mean the media. You know. You know that's how he feels at least. I'm here to validate his feelings. You know, I want to, let him know that his feelings are valid.
I did like the Stephon Diggs thing that you retweeted.
Oh, that is, I've never related to somebody more.
Stephon Diggs, after the most recent loss, what did he say exactly?
He said, he was getting into it with Jair Alexander before the game started, right?
Right.
And, they asked him about it after the game, and he said, I'm never the bigger person. I'm not letting Ish go.
I'm as petty as they get. I'm never the bigger person.
And I'm like, me too, Stephon.
Totally relatable.
I'm really bad at that. I'm really bad at being the bigger person. It's like it's not really gratifying.
There's a little self-realization in that by Stephon, though.
That's very much like, so, yeah. So, it gave me hope about him as a teammate. You know, like he's not sitting here trying to act like, you know, he tried to drop it or whatever. He's like, no, I actively did not do that, and I'm never going
to
do that.
So we're attaching no particular significance to the thing. And then you've written, far from attacking or conspiring, you wrote a column today applauding Penny for bringing a swift end to the Tyreek Smith drama.
Yeah, I think he deserves it. I mean... The mentor has been adamant that Penny did not make the mess, right? I am not somebody that's ever afraid to criticize Penny when he is the one who makes the mess.
Right.
Done it before, we'll do it again. But he didn't make this mess. This was, straight from the guy, right? And he cleaned it up and he fixed it. Now, I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know that we ever will know what happened. But I do know that a situation came up. Penny addressed it after a day, and now Tyreek Smith is back at practice, and everybody feels good again. So,
what's interesting is the mentor himself said that it was not FedEx and said it was not Penny. And the collective people have basically
said. That's
right.
They have said it. They didn't know it either.
They said, we have paid every penny supposed to pay.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
So who the hell was it?
Yeah, I don't know.
And where's money supposed to come from except for the collective?
Yeah, the collective. Well, there's FedEx disbursements.
And there's like, where else is money supposed to be coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, it's a good question. I don't know the answer. And nobody seems to want to say that, privately or publicly. So, I think, like I said, I don't know that we'll ever necessarily know.
There's this whole theory percolating. It's a Rick Stansbury problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's a player getter.
Mm-hmm.
He was a player getter.
Yeah.
Got a player. The player said representation. The player's mentor says representations were made that were not delivered upon. And so it's easy to just connect based on nothing other than pure conjecture that, must be that Rick said you'll get this and now he's not getting this.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah.
Because I was reading some story. I can't remember what the story was. But there was some entity that was supposed to pay for something, right?
It was separate from the world of sports.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was in the world of sports. I can't even tell you what it is.
Yeah.
It might have been that Donald Trump Atlantic piece where he said he wants to have Hitler's generals, where there was a funeral that
next there was a funeral of a soldier.
Yes.
And he said, "I'll pay for the he said I'll pay for the
yes.
the funeral." And then
it
was a $60,000 funeral. He said, "I'm not paying that. And
according to the story, he said a lot more than that. But
yes.
Yeah,
right.
But there was another. It might have been that. It might have been another one where the person that committed to the payment and to the funding left, right? And so that the company left behind felt not obligated, not beholden to cover the expense. And I think that's – I don't think that's what's happening here. I think the University of Memphis is going to cover what they said they're going to cover.
It is a reasonable – as theories go, it is a reasonable theory.
Yes. Well, there's no question that – I mean, Rick Stansbury was definitely overpaying and overpromising.
Well, here's the other question. Do you think
– And that is a penny – Penny has to clean that up too. I mean, and he fired Rick Stansbury. You know, because this is a very expensive roster. This roster, you're not going to get your money's worth out of this roster. Let me be completely clear about
that. GP reported that Tyreek Smith has already gotten $175,000.
Yeah.
Have you seen Tyreek Smith play basketball?
I've seen I've
seen him a little bit now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the $175,000 was just like so far partial payment or the full thing. It seems like a pretty penny for Tyreek Smith.
Yeah, I mean, just if you ended it there, I mean, I think that'd be a pretty penny for Tyreek Smith. But that's not it. I mean, there's more.
And there's more.
And so, you know,
the $175,000 made him unhappy.
Right. I have always thought that the NIL bubble was going to pop, certainly in Memphis, I think it will, because if it takes $525,000 to get Tyreek Smith, who averaged 8-5 last year on a team that didn't make the tournament, we got a problem.
What do you think this roster cost?
Totally,
just for total conjecture ballpark.
I think
it cost $2 million?
No, it cost more than that. I think it cost $3 million at least.
How the hell can they do a $3 million roster every year?
Well, they can if they win. I mean,
well, that's the thing. If you're winning, people can't wait to hand you the money.
Yeah, I mean, it is a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, NIL. And that if you are successful with it, it's very easy to go back to those people and say, "Hey, you want to do this again?
That was fun."
Yeah, yeah. Elite Eight. Let's do it again. How about Final Four? Let's go to $5 million. You know, like that's easy. I mean, I'm not saying that Memphis would be able to raise $5 million, but I mean, you could see a world where, you know, I know how I feel when good things happen. I'm willing to spend a lot more money when I'm happy, right? And so I think that's kind of just the human psychology of it. But it's when you have two straight years to this, which is what a falling short this year would represent, two straight years of disappointment.
Then it's harder to continue.
With big money, big ticket items, you know, people are going to, I think, get fatigued and disenchanted, as it were.
Do you have any thoughts on the old days?
Well, you know, it is kind of funny. We romanticize these old days about college basketball, and in some ways, it was different.
I wanted you to tell me that the old days are the old days.
That's the thing about the old days.
They're the old
days. Right. That was the old famous line in The Wire.
But you never saw The Wire.
I've watched The Wire. But intermittently. I haven't watched
The
Wire.
The old days are the old days, yes.
Yeah,
we romanticize the old days.
We do. And I don't mean that just like you sitting around your radio listening to, you know, Eisenhower. You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about college basketball, right? We in college sports.
I was not here for Eisenhower.
We tend to act like people weren't getting paid.
I'd romanticize FDR and the fireside chats.
Right,
you know.
Yes.
Winston Churchill's and as the radio addresses to the nation.
That's the kind of stuff you think
back.
We actually have one of those in the lobby, if you want to go check it out. But people have always been paid.
Right.
People have always gotten deals done.
No, but people haven't always been able to move and get eligible.
That's exactly right. It's the combination of the two,
It's the portal.
It's the combination of the portal. It's the combination of everybody now very much knowing publicly what somebody else is getting. Right, that did not used to be the way it was.
Well, and even if you were, you couldn't leave.
Right,
you could be unhappy about not getting whatever, but you couldn't leave unless you just wanted to go sit at home. Now you can leave.
It's
the portal.
Yeah, it's the kerosene.
Here's the problem.
There's no question.
Is that courts have said, they finally looked at this and said, no, you can't restrain where players go. There's nothing that's illegal in our antitrust laws. So there's literally only one way out of this, and it's to call them employees and make them have to be employees.
Which front office sports believes that if Donald Trump is elected, which have you voted for him yet?
I haven't voted yet.
Okay. If he is elected,
I'm one of the undecided voters out there that you hear
people believe that a Republican government will pass NCAA friendly
they will allow
legislation and do the, you know, employee and all those things. So.
Maybe we'll see.
I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying that's what front office sports believes is going to happen. I mean, you're the one that went to Harvard,
so you are applauding Penny.
Yeah, I think it was a really good job by him. Because and sort of the whole thesis and premise of the article was very simple. Here's the sandbox, right? And if you're going to play in it,
yeah,
you got to play in it. You know, you can't, and that's what Tony Bennett said. He said you can't half-ass it. You can't be in it, you know, one day not, and like you gotta be. And I'll say this too: why can't Penny be the best at playing in the sandbox? Why can't Penny be the best at it?
Right.
You know, I mean,
that's funny. When he was hired, we always used to say, "Here's a guy who has operated in the AAU world where players come and go,
right?
And he's a massive personality,
right?
Electric and compelling, and whatever else should be awesome at this.
Exactly right.
And he has, in fact, always built rosters. Now, I'll say this though: the rosters he's building now are not as impressive as some rosters he's built before.
Oh, not even close. Not even close.
So, why is it? Even as the money has gotten to be more blatant, a more blatant part of this, the rosters have.
Well, this is the first roster where you're underwhelmed. I mean, last year, I know we know what happened, but last year going into it, you have Jaquan Walton, who was lighting it up from three at Wichita State. You had Jordan Brown, who
looked like a good.
I mean, it looks really good.
Looked like a
and
really
it was
good,
good. It was top 10 in the country.
Talent
you know?
Was a good roster.
So this is the first year where. You look at it and you kind of have to squint quite a bit to think it's going to be good. I'm not super high on it at all, really. I was talking to somebody the other day. I think if this team gets out of a non-conference play above 500, it's a minor miracle.
Right.
They have a lot of work to do. They don't have enough shooting. Their interior is really limited. I do like their guard play. It looks good, PJ and Tyrese, but it's like, okay, what else
you
got?
You've been a PJ skeptic.
I have been, yeah. And he looked really good against North Carolina.
All right.
So that's what you got. That's what you want to see.
You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. That's
oh, yeah. Grizzlies opener tonight.
Grizzlies opener tonight.
I'm getting pushed aside for the main event.
No. What happened is Brad has told me that I'm supposed to break at 9:55, and it's already passed. I've stolen minutes from Chris for you.
Okay. Thank you so
much. There you go.
Sorry, Chris.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.